You are listening to Megiddo Radio. Megiddo Radio is a radio ministry of Megiddo Films. For more, visit our website at www.megiddofilms.org.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome. This is Paul Flynn with Megiddo Radio for the 17th of May, 2014. Thank you all for tuning in. How have you found the show? And this week we're going to be dealing with a topic I've been looking at for the last week or so, which is dealing with more to do with Pope Francis. Pope Francis's economic views have made quite a stir, especially in social media. If he tweets something, it seems to end up all over the place. He's very, very popular, being called a Teflon Pope after all. Nothing seems to stick to our friend Mario Bergoglio. Now, I am not going to be looking so much at Pope Francis's background. I want to look today at, is these claims, some people will say it's Marxist, some people say, I think it's more fascist, but that's, we'll get into that in a while. Are these revolutionary claims? For those who have no idea what's been going on at the moment, on the date of, it was on the 9th of May, if I'm not mistaken. Pope Francis gives an address to the UN chief executive officers. Now, this is a little bit over a week ago that this took place. He, while addressing the United Nations, stated some of the following things, which had some people in the liberal media, especially Huffington Post, saying, wow, this is completely different. And it's really, I don't know how you put it, from the liberal side, capitalism is a great evil. And it's almost perceived from the liberal side, because the Roman Catholic Church are not known for being an institution promoting freedoms around the world by any stretch of the imagination. But that Pope Francis is somehow saying something different. Something that this new generation will liken to. But the problem is, he's not saying anything different at all. In fact, when Pope Francis calls for the quote-unquote legitimate redistribution of the wealth, he is not saying anything new at all from the Roman Catholic Church at all. What he's saying could be traced back to Leo XIII with a document called Rerum Novarum, which was an encyclical written in 1891, not too long after a lot of Karl Marx's writings. I think Das Kapital was out for a while by that stage, but at least about 10 years. And go back even further to the medieval church, Thomas Aquinas. So, what's disturbing, well, we probably won't get into it in this show, is how this understanding of economics has spread throughout. I see it all over the place, especially in evangelical circles. Now, often when people think of the topic of economics, they see it as a kind of a very dry subject, something the Bible speaks nothing about, or the state, or the role of the state in controlling, or not controlling, the economy. But the Bible has quite a bit to say. I always say to people, the Bible doesn't say a lot about what the state is supposed to do, mainly because the state isn't supposed to do very, very much. The state is supposed to protect the borders, the state is supposed to do, it is supposed to punish wicked doers, it can wield the sword, things like this. That's the state level. The church cannot wield a sword. But the thing is, with Rome, it is both a church and a state at the same time. So it wields the sword and sees herself, if it's still following Aquinas' writings and anybody else's writings, that the Pope is the rightful head over all the kings of the earth. Completely fulfilling Revelation 17 and 18. She reigned over the kings of the earth. Now, when Pope Francis was addressing the United Nations there recently, he says, and I'm going to try and quote the entire thing. I don't know if I'll get a chance to debunk the whole thing. An essential principle of management is the refusal to be satisfied with current results and to press forward, in the conviction that those gains are only consolidated by working to achieve even more. In the case of global political and economic organization, much more needs to be achieved, since the important part of humanity does not share in the benefits of progress and is in fact relegated to the status of second-class citizens. And here is the problem with the, not just one problem, with the whole Marxist class struggle kind of idea, the fact that, well, the poor people are seen as second-class citizens. Here's the thing. Just because if you believe the Bible, and you believe the Bible is the Word of God, then you will see, just because somebody doesn't have a lot of money, doesn't even say somebody has half as much money as you, doesn't make them second-class citizens. They're equally as important, but one has been blessed more than the other. But because of all this idea of social justice, the social gospel, we're doing works of justice, and the problem is that it's seen as unjust. It's always wrapped around terminology as unjust, that in the West we enjoy, say, we have cars, we have a lot of things. And we've been blessed in the West, sometimes and spoiled in a lot of ways. We don't have poverty, at least as is seen in most of the world. I mean, compare a lot of the world living on like $1 a day, whatever people live on, compared to, well, if somebody can't find a job here, they live off 160 or 170 times that if you go by the Irish welfare system, or go to any other country where people. And essentially, what these systems lead to is gouging of the productive sector and flooding, I won't say flooding, but giving easy, it's a lot easier to not work in these economies. That's why they don't work. Now, Rome has been anti-capitalist for centuries. A lot of these pagan ideas against private property, and we'll get into this in a while, against private property, the central institution of capitalists and the capitalist state is private property. What you do with your land, as long as it is not breaking the laws, it's yours. You are able to live and work off that. Nobody can steal that land off of you, because thou shalt not steal. If the state is truly Christian, it's not going to just take your land for any building project or oil pipeline or anything else like that. Now, a company may offer you money, and if you want to take it, that's up to you, but the state cannot coerce and then come in. Then you have fascism. Then you have the corporate state. Then you have the two working together, and that's the way Mussolini describes it. Benito Mussolini, the Italian dictator from, I think it was 1922 up to his death in 1945 at the end of the Second World War. And this is very much in line with Rome. Rome signed the Concordat, an agreement with Benito Mussolini, and also later on with Adolf Hitler. These Concordats, to my knowledge, at least the one in Germany, is still in effect. Especially, I think the one in Italy has been updated, but I have to do a bit more research into that. Type in Concordats and see the Concordats that the Vatican has signed with many nations around the world. And is also in the process of negotiating many of these. But he says, Pope Francis, returning to his comments to the United Nations on the 9th of May, since an important part of humanity does not share in the benefits of progress, it is in fact relegated to the status of second-class citizens. Future sustainable development goals must therefore be formulated and carried out. It's based on a problem, well, you're being unjust towards that person because they have less. No, the Bible talks about you shall not steal, you shall not covet another man's stuff, the 10th commandment, and you eat your own bread, and you do not be busybodies, the second, first and second Thessalonians, we'll get into that in a while. The Bible, the principles that come out of biblical teaching is clearly capitalism. To veer off into any collectivism is paganism. It comes straight from the writings of Aristotle and Plato and has no place in the Bible. Now, should private individuals help out those who are in need? Absolutely. Should the state, and this is what Rome is advocating, should the state intervene to effectively force you to help your neighbor, which is forcing you to steal? It's stealing from you. It's like Robin Hood taking from one, just giving to the other. And really, it's an excuse for state intervention. It's an excuse for growing the state. The state gets much bigger, gains in power. Because, for example, the more rights you have, quote-unquote rights, the more the state must intervene to provide you with these rights. I'm getting off topic, but I've spent a number of years researching this back and forth. I've never done a show on... I don't think I've ever done a show on economics before. This isn't purely an economics, but it is hugely important to understand because I fear that many Christians have a Romanist understanding of foreign policy, if they follow the Bush administration from in the United States, or if a Romanist in their understanding of the economy when they think, well, the state must intervene to help out the lower classes. Your understanding does not come from the Bible. It comes from Thomas Aquinas, or even further back, the philosopher, as he called him, Aristotle. But Rome, and I want to show, so Pope Francis is fundamentally, he's really anti-capitalist. Whenever Rome gets into an area, capitalism is the worst thing for Romanism. They don't want capitalism. But the communisms, they're not the biggest fan of that either. But to be honest, they much prefer communism to capitalism. If communism is already prominent in the country and violent revolution is already a thing that's already there and established, like Rwanda, then you'll see them siding with another group and they will wipe out the other group. It was seen in the 1995 genocide between the Hutus and the Tutsis. Now, let's look at some of the things that he calls... And it doesn't say capitalism. You see, the thing is, he's promoting caring capitalism. Specifically, just skipping down a little bit, this involves challenging all forms of justice and resisting the economy of exclusion. See, it's excluding people. It's not giving things to everybody. No, no. Did you earn that? Were you agreed with that contract? It doesn't encourage hard work. Capitalism came out of the Protestant Reformation. Before then, you had feudalist socialism that was prominent across Europe, and serfdom and all these different layers. But this institution of private property, which became that you couldn't take from somebody else's land. It's yours to keep. The state can't take it from you. And he also calls it a throwaway culture and culture of death. Capitalism is like, and always like, because people can be, oh, well, I'm not communist, I'm a socialist, but I'm not a capitalist. Whatever you want to say, let's get it down to brass, or get it down to the roots of the issue. Do you believe in private property, or do you believe somebody's private property can be taken from them at any point? If you believe in private property, and it is a thing, and it's not the government to manipulate the economy, to try and intervene, to try and distribute the wealth, like what Pope Francis is calling for here, if you don't believe in that, and if you believe that private property, and it is hard work, and it's not, you know, you're rewarded for the deeds which you carry out, as in you go to a job, you wouldn't even have an income tax in proper capitalist society. You earn your own bread. Now, there's certain charges that go towards the state, use of the roads and all that. I acknowledge that. But when we're talking about your income, things you earn, the government should not have anything to do with that. Then you're a capitalist. Otherwise, well, you're veered in the direction of socialism. With this in mind, I would like to remind you, now he goes on to describe Luke 19:1-10 as an act. Zacchaeus, the tax collector, he says, he talks about Luke 19:1-10. He talks about this as an example of sharing and justice. But you see, the state is the only one who can carry out justice, and it's seen as unjust. Again, this is social justice. This is the stuff that the Jesuits promulgate. This is Catholic social teaching. This is stuff that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. It is not new at all. And we'll get into it in a little bit. He uses, probably using that Zacchaeus idea that it says, because his conscience was being awakened by the gaze of Christ, Jesus, this same spirit should be at the beginning and end of all political and economic activity. The gaze, often silence, of that part of the human family which is cast off, left behind, ought to be awakened the conscience of political and economic agents and lead them to generous and courageous decisions with immediate results, like the decision of Zacchaeus. Does a spirit of solidarity of sharing guide their thoughts and actions? Now, is there any problem with Zacchaeus giving away half of his money like he did and returning four, I don't know, was it fivefold, fourfold? Of all that he defrauded people? No, and that's right. If you have stolen from them, you give it back to them because you've stolen from them. That's wrong. But also, is it wrong to share your own money? Of course not. But here's the thing. He's using that example, but is that the state going up to Zacchaeus, knocking him off the tree and dragging Jesus into his house? I mean, that is kind of like, because what they do is they use individual acts of charity, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Christians, if you see genuine poverty and somebody starving on the floor, you don't see much of it anymore. People are usually wasting a lot of, I mean, in the Western world, in Ireland, in the United States and Britain, poverty, the way it exists in the third world, it doesn't exist. People often, it doesn't exist in the same degree. What a person begging could get in an hour is what a person in the third world could get in a day, probably. Working like crazy. Often because the government has regulated the economy and only lets certain industries in there. Had it been free market capitalism, then you'd have a lot more industries going in, etc. And improving the standard of living. And they don't have to work in that factory if it's paying terrible wages. They can go to another place. There's competition. It always improves a place, at least economically. I'm not saying that's their only issue of a place. I'm not saying you increase the wealth of a nation and that is. But we have to see that the collectivism purported by Rome is no way biblical and no way supported by the Bible, because what he's talking about with Zacchaeus and the example he gives to the United Nations in Luke chapter 19 verses 1 to 10, that is not the state getting involved and forcing him to do that. See, in taxes, you legally have to do that, or they put you in prison, they take money from you, and they give it to somebody else. They only give part of it to somebody else, but that's a different issue. So, the account of Jesus and Zacchaeus teaches us that above and beyond economic and social systems and theories, there will always be a need to promote generous, effective, and practical openness to the needs of others. Jesus does not ask Zacchaeus to change jobs, nor does he condemn his financial activity. That's immaterial. He goes on at the end, and here's the problem. Here's his logical deduction, which has nothing to do with this passage at all, where he says, a contribution to this equitable development will be made both by an international activity aimed at the integral human development of all human peoples, and by the legitimate redistribution. How is that redistributed? Is it because people just making their own decisions to do that, or is it the state coercing them to do that? I wonder which it is. Legitimate redistribution of economic benefits by who? It says by the state. An example of Zacchaeus has nothing to do with what he's talking about. It says by the state. He's a private individual doing, and the thing is, probably, and we don't know from the passage, one of his idols was probably money. Just like the rich young ruler, I think it's in, I have to look it up there. The rich young ruler, do I have it here? Oh yeah, it's Mark 10:17. I have it here. Mark 10:17. For the rich young ruler, he was told to sell all his goods and give to the poor, not because it was social justice, but because that was his idol. Repent and believe the gospel. You can't bring your idols of riches with you to the throne of grace. You must turn from them. Otherwise, your beliefs are nothing different. They haven't changed at all. Regeneration changes your mind, changes your heart. A radical transformation from being God-hating then to loving that God you once hated and hating the sin you once loved. Now, so this is the Huffington Post, and this is, I'm just going to play this here for you, and we're going to comment on it now.
In a message to the United Nations today, Pope Francis urged governments to turn their attention to income inequality, saying, quote, in the case of global political and economic organization, much more needs to be achieved. Such an important part of humanity does not share in the benefits of progress and is, in fact, relegated to the status of second-class citizens. Specifically, this involves challenging all forms of injustice and resisting the economy of exclusion, the throwaway culture and the culture of death, which nowadays sadly risk becoming passively accepted. Pope Francis went on to suggest that inequality can be addressed by, quote, the legitimate redistribution of economic benefits by the state, as well as indispensable cooperation between the private sector and civil society.
And who distributes it? The state, not individual people. But the state must intervene. This is always what's purported.
It's a call to action. I'm not exactly sure what he means to be calling to action. And you know, the specifics are difficult. But I think what he continues to do is shine a spotlight on income inequality and on the incredible disparity between those who have and those who have absolutely nothing. And the 20,000.
And you see, the thing is, notice how he says those, not those who have absolutely nothing. I mean, if you look at the benefits that the state has given, if you look at the poorest regions in any country, anywhere, the poorest continent in the world is the one that receives the most money, the most aid, and just look at it. It clearly doesn't work. And it's always this, yeah, give to individuals who are in need. When if somebody is full on hard times, fine. But this is not what they're talking about. They are talking about state intervention, regulated economy. The definition, what fascism really looks like, is it's a regulated economy. It's a regulated economy. And that way the state can pick the winners and the losers. That way when a corporation or any other group that they want to succeed goes belly up, does, you know, bad business practices, rather than doing what they should do in a capitalist system, let them go under, basically. Rather than letting that happen, they are supported by the state and given favorable terms. It's like going to a casino, betting all everything. It doesn't matter how much you lose, you'll always be, the house will keep propping you up with extra money. Now, that is not capitalism. Capitalists, they would be let go. I mean, any of the failing banks would be let go. They would not. But they're using this, well, oh, it's terrible. These people have nothing. Well, you have to ask yourself. Sometimes people are born into situations not as blessed as others. But is it a human right that everybody has exactly the same stuff? I mean, who determines? See, it's all based on, well, they don't have enough for their need. Well, how do you determine that? How do you encourage fiscal responsibility or whatever when you take from the unproductive, don't incent, but instead have the benefits of being unemployed? And see, they don't call it, I mean, they call it entitlements. I mean, it's a disgusting word, if you ask me. Entitlements with social welfare and all these kind of other things. That's what they call it here. They call it dole in Ireland. They call it if you don't have a job and you get certain job seekers' allowance, things like that. But often it ends up being taking from those who earn a lot of money. I'll say, well, they're earning too much money. We have to tax them more. And then you have to, there's nothing wrong with having things. The thing is, it's wrong when they become an idol. It's wrong when you don't use what you have for the glory of God. It's wrong when you don't use that, those things for God's glory. Otherwise, they become idols. I am not here saying we should accrue everything to ourselves and get that nice house out in the country and get all these things. That's not what I... But there's nothing wrong with having things. There's nothing wrong with having a comfortable home. It doesn't have to, you don't, it doesn't have to be everybody equally poor. So there's no incentive to do this at all. Now, I knew it was here in front of me. The Bible talks about, right, at the end of... Okay, it's at the end of 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 9. Not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an example to follow us. For even when we are with you, this we command you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. Very simple thing. If he will not work, he shall not eat. Now, this does not include people who are incapacitated physically or whatever and might be incapable of other people. It also talks about a man of the house, and another part of scripture says, if any man does not provide for his own, he's worse than an infidel and hath denied the faith. He's worse than an unbeliever. If you are the husband of your wife, or you are the head of the home, it's your responsibility to provide for your home. It's not the state's responsibility. It's not at all the state's responsibility. Actually, the Bible talks about certain dangers of large government and crying out in the same way the Israelites cried out to Samuel for a king. They wanted to be just like every other nation because they wanted to trust in a king and trust in the system that they had over there, not trust in the biblical system that they were given of magistrates and elders, and there were separated powers. You had the church and you had the state, and you had magistrates following the law of God, and then you had the elders teaching the law of God. So if any should not work, it says, for we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, walking, working not at all, but are busybodies. You see, this is the thing. This is what happens when you're not working. When you just end up just wasting time being a busybody, involving yourself in other people's affairs. But now them that are such we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. There is no hint that the state should get involved and provide for them if they are not willing to work. Most people who are on the dole are not willing to work. They'll find every excuse not to work. They will find every excuse not to work. Now, let's go back to the Huffington Post Live dealing with this.
1,000 or 30,000 children who die every day just because they're poor. I mean, I think these are the things that gnaw at him. And he's trying to say, let's not...
Our children dying are because the state is not getting involved. Often it's because the state is involved. If you want to see state involvement in redistribution of wealth and a country that is being lifted up and admired by the CNNs of the world, look at Venezuela. Look at the anarchy of Venezuela and ask yourself if that socialist utopia is really working. No, countries like Cuba, countries all those, they're stuck light years behind most other countries because they have not developed and they are shackled by it and their poverty is much worse. So this whole idea that the state must get involved, the state ruins the economy when it gets involved. That's a pragmatic argument to say the state should get involved. But what's another reason? They're not responsible, biblically they're not supposed to get involved in that. They're not so, thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not covet. socialism and collectivism are all based on the common goods, or the common good, or the universal destiny or destination of all goods. This common ownership idea is being the norm, or what is the true natural law, as referred to by Thomas Aquinas, that is what comes from, well, the eternal law, and it is not, but private property is not as important as the common good. This is what social justice is all about. But it sounds wonderful. But the problem is, it does not come from the Bible. And when states get involved, see, people are selfish. People, when they get involved, I mean, the states, when they get more power, do not, in any way, shape, or form, especially if it goes beyond the biblical boundaries, what they should do, and it's way beyond that in every country on the planet, then the results are not good. They do not result in what they're talking about. Everybody doesn't get an abundance, because what you do, again, and it always ends up happening this way, the unproductive, the lazy sector of society gets propped up and encouraged to stay in that. Again, look at the poorest regions in any country, and they have received the most state benefits. Not entitlements, benefits. That's what they're getting. And those who are working are being penalized for working. So working is not encouraged. Enterprise, starting businesses, working hard, Protestant work ethic, that's not encouraged. But instead you have, well, it's almost easier to stay on the dole, stay on food stamps or whatever else. I'm not talking about in every single case. There are times when people fall upon bad times. But why? Often people fall upon bad times because they made bad decisions. You cannot base an economy based upon propping up people who make horrible decisions. Well, what would people do if they fell upon really hard times? And in the past, it would fall upon their family or the church. Not the state. But anyway, let's continue with this.
Not forget this. Oh, great, the stock market is rebounding. But still, we have to remember this. And I think that's part of what the job of a religious leader is, of any kind, is to remind us of the moral issues that are in front of us and make sure.
See, it's moral now. Everybody wants to have the same amount of money. Somebody can't have more than the other person. So it's moral. See, they talk about, anyway, it's the hypocrisy that often kills me. Often in liberal stations, they talk about morals, even though they don't want to, where do these morals come from? These are Roman Catholic morals. And this is, Rome and the liberals are very much go hand in hand.
Sure that, you know, whatever else might distract us does not keep our eye off the important issues that we were sent here to deal with.
And you're right, he brings it up pretty regularly. Just a couple weeks ago, he tweeted on April 28th, inequality is the root of social evil. So he's talking about it pretty regularly. Brantley, what was your response when you saw this tweet and when you heard about what he said recently?
I think it's great.
Now, the thing about that tweet is, inequality is a source of all evil. Now, inequality, because you don't have the same amount of income? Well, why does somebody have more income? Sometimes they're born into those families, sometimes they didn't earn it, and sometimes they earned it. Is that unjust, that they earn that money? Just say somebody has done twice as many hours in a factory. Say somebody does 40 hours of work. Another person does 20 hours. Should that person with 20 hours get exactly the same amount of money? You really need to qualify what you're talking about here. And that's the problem with all of these collectivist systems and this talk about redistributing wealth. Based on what? And it's always based on need. And the problem with basing on need is the state always defines what need is based on the social policy or based on the dictates of Rome. When they become the largest influence, because they are promulgating, they're spreading their ideas through various ways. Let's continue with this. And he's going to bring up a document in a second called Rerum Novarum, how this is not anything new. And what Pope Francis is saying is nothing new.
Great. I think Pope Francis is really bringing to light an aspect of Catholic social teaching which has not always been very well known or very well appreciated. You know, I'd point out his predecessor, Benedict XVI, you know, was not known for talking about social inequality or redistribution of wealth. Yet, you know, if you actually look at some of his writings, Caritas and Veritate, he talks about the redistribution, the Compendium of Social Doctrine of the Church, which was published under John Paul II, also talks about this as well. And really, if, you know, those familiar with the Catholic social teaching tradition, you know, going back to Rerum Novarum, the 19th century, the Catholic Church has long...
Rerum Novarum, we'll look at that in a little bit in a while, and I don't know how much more we'll get through, but we'll probably spend a couple of shows on this topic. But Rerum Novarum, written, it was 1891, Pope Leo XIII, all of these ideas, they're not new, and collectivism, what's really been purported in there, and is sometimes it argues for, in the same way Thomas Aquinas will say, the benefits of private property, the institution of private property, but then saying, well, the common good, and ultimately leads to this, that the common good or the common ownership of all things, really state ownership, is more important than, how would I put it, it's more important than private property. It's more important than the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not covet. I just want to point out, there's a couple of slogans that this is wrapped up in, and this is popularly taught by communists as well. Communist slogan would be something like this: for each according to his ability, to each according to his need. According to his ability, according to his need, as in, and who decides all this? Who decides ability? Who decides need? The state. Very similarly as well, as American liberals say, human rights are more important than poverty, or not, property rights, sorry, property rights. So, in Ireland, there's a group called People Before Profit, very similar, very pious sounding terminology based before this. Let's continue.
Criticized the inequalities and the excesses of capitalism. So I think it's great that he's bringing more attention to this.
I mean, it seems...
What is the inequalities of capitalism? Is it saying that somebody who's done the same amount of work? Now, if somebody was treated unfairly in a company and somebody, just say for example, somebody was agreed to be paid $50,000 by a company by the end of the year, yearly salary, but only received $20,000. But another person was also agreed the same contract, and say $50,000 was agreed as well. But instead, they got the money that was agreed to be given to that other person. That would be inequality. Why? Because one was defrauded of what was agreed to him, and it was stolen from another person. If contract breach comes in, then the state should come in and penalize that, you know, that person, because a law has been broken. There has been an agreement to pay a certain amount, and then that should be honored. But what they're saying is everybody should have the same, which is kind of what it comes down to. And that's the ultimately the idea of collectivism. Again, what did he mean by inequality? Half of their jobs pay more than anywhere else. I mean, they should take a pay cut if that's the case. And most of these people won't do that. Will they take a pay cut? No, they want the state. They want the state to provide absolutely everything. And when the gravy train runs out, which it does eventually, and they wonder why the economy collapses. Anyway, so continue with this.
To me, that he's bringing more attention to this, and as you said, historically the Catholic Church has regularly criticized inequality. But why does it feel to me, someone at my age, that this is the first time I'm seeing the Catholic Church step up and talk about this? This feels like a new thing to me.
I think part of what has happened since Pope Benedict is that we have, you know, that the, frankly, the Catholic Church and many on the internet have realized that this is very interesting. And so we're talking about it a lot more. The dissemination of information happens much quicker. And so people are able to look, oh, there's a tweet, there's a, you know, when the Pope's tweet makes huge news. That shows you that social media has a lot to do with why we're just really being confronted and aware of these teachings more. But it's not just that. I do think that there is a change of emphasis after the last pope. I agree absolutely that Pope Benedict did talk about these things and especially wrote about them. But this is really a change of what the face of the church was. Pope Francis's first words out of the docket was, "I want a poor church for the poor." And so that shows you kind of where he's been from the start. And he's just continuing to be that while taking care of a lot of other very important business in the Catholic Church.
So my argument would be this. Well,
so this week,
if, for example, they really believe this, why not start with their own wealth? Why don't you sell most of those gold statues? And you see, the thing is, with people who always purport this, it's not their own wealth. It's either two types of people who seem to like socialism. It's either those who are directly benefiting from it, for various reasons, or those, they don't want their own money involved. It's always those over there. And it's always the redistribution of somebody else's wealth. Well, if, for example, the government told them that they were going to tax them twice as much and said, well, we're going to give it to the poor down the road. And you said, whoa, 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 whoa. Well, I already earned that money. And you get that kind of a sense of, well, thou shalt not steal. Don't take my goods. And if I want to give it to the person down the road, well, that's what I can do. But that's great if you do it, especially if the person's in dire need. But is it injustice? Have you stolen from that person? See, that's the thing that's kind of almost implied. And again, like they just said, this is not anything new. Many popes, and I just want to give you a few quotes before we finish up the show, have talked about things like the universal destination of goods. This is Pope John Paul II, who talked about in his expression in his 1987 encyclical on social concern, it is necessary to state once more the characteristic principle of Christian social doctrine. Again, this is not anything new. What Francis is saying, he's a diehard Romanist. There's just nothing new. He's just being very, very Jesuitical about it. The goods of this world are originally meant for all, right? The right of private property is valid and necessary. Look, see, and it's the same type of language in Rerum Novarum, and we'll probably deal with Rerum Novarum next week and look at how it really purports a form of fascism in the same way Thomas Aquinas did. But as Pope John Paul II said, the right of private property is valid and necessary, because according to Aquinas, it was part of the positive law, it wasn't part of the natural law. Again, we'll look at that next week. But it does not nullify the value of this principle. So, the principle he's talking about is the goods of this world are originally meant for all. Again, this goes back to Aquinas and Aristotle, if you go back further again. Private property, in fact, is under a social mortgage, which means that it is an intrinsically social function based upon the justified precisely by the principle of the universal destination of goods. Also, he also talks about another place in 1990, speaking on a so-called ecological crisis. The earth is ultimately, this is Pope John Paul II as well, just to just show you, this is nothing new. Benedict XVI talked about various things, because, again, this is Romanist. And you know what the scary thing is? Professing evangelical Christians all over the church now agree with Rome more than they do the Bible. They are crying out for the government to provide more jobs. They are crying out for the government to do all these things for them. They're crying out for more benefits, child benefit, these benefits, everything you can imagine that is more in tune with Rome, how much we need a reformation. It is no accident that when the Protestant Reformation spread throughout Europe and left nothing but Spain and Italy in the hands of the Pope, that prosperity also followed it. Financial as well, prosperity. They became wealthier. But they used those things for things, missionary activities, etc. And Europe changed. It was called the Dark Ages for a reason, not just because the Bible was kept back from the people and the translation of it banned, but also there was no development for about 1,000 years, very, very little. And you had the suppression of everything by the Roman Catholic Church state because it dominated Europe. It dominated the kings of the earth, especially from around at least the 11th, 12th century onwards. Boniface the 8th, Innocent the 3rd. Now, so he talks about this has direct consequences for the problem at hand. It is manifestly unjust that a privileged few should continue to accumulate excess goods. And how do you define excess goods? Oh, well, that's too much that you need. You don't need that much. They always justify taking it and say, well, it's unjust that you've got too much. Whoa, well, they earn that. And they can, now that they have done that, they have earned that, they've said they've saved that amount of money. What if you said, well, no, you've got too much? This is a controlled economy, and this is what a redistribution of wealth looks like. It's always put under the pretense of looking after the poor, but the thing is, everyone gets poorer in a system such as this. And he talks about that it's manifestly unjust. And then I'm just going to quote one more time from John Paul II before I move on to quoting somebody else. If one is in extreme necessity, he has the right to procure for himself what he needs out of the riches of others. He has the right to procure for himself from the riches of others. This is in the Vatican II Constitution that Pope John Paul quotes. Second Vatican Council, paragraph 69, 1965. Doesn't that sound a lot like liberation theology? Because you need that. Need defines what is just. Because, say, you're in, especially in Latin America, where they promulgate liberation theology, which is another form of collectivism that came out of the spawn of Aquinas. And to be honest, it didn't just enter the church then. I don't want to just say that this pagan idea was born complete with Aquinas, but Rome looks to Aquinas. It is he's one of the main doctors of the church. But that idea of universal ownership of all goods and all this kind of thing, it crept into the church more and more as it became more paganized. And then the Roman church became a completely apostate when Boniface III, if I'm not mistaken, in 606 AD, took to himself the title of universal bishop right after Gregory the Great said, well, anyone who takes that title is the forerunner of Antichrist, and we'll deal with that in another show. Right after he does that, and then Rome was completely apostate, no longer pretty much a Christian church, and it drifted towards that. It took a long time for that to happen. What Rome, I'm going to leave it with this, but what Rome has promulgated and what Rome has encouraged for a very long time is this. The various forms of collectivism. And John W. Robbins' excellent book called Ecclesiastical Megalomania, the economic and political thought of the Roman Catholic Church. He talks about the different forms Oh, but I'm just reading his paragraph actually here. Roman Catholic economic thought, as developed by the popes in their encyclicals and by Roman church-state councils, has been a contributor to, if not the only source of, several forms of anti-capitalist political and economic organization during the long hegemony of the Roman church-state. Among these forms are, and here's how it works out, here's what it looks like, if you want to see the fruit of it. Feudalism and guild socialism in Europe during the Middle Ages, fascism in Italy, Spain, Portugal, Croatia, and Latin America in the 20th century, Nazism in Germany in the 20th century, and that is undeniable that Rome was directly involved in the reign of Adolf Hitler. They basically depended upon it. Interventionalism and redistributive state in the West, including United States in the 20th century. America for 100 years has become more Romanist gradually as it's become state interventionism in all, basically sticking their nose in, like, in foreign affairs and doing just like what Islam does with holy war, justifying holy war. Unfortunately, this idea has gotten more popular in so-called Protestant circles, that the Crusades were necessary in order to prevent the spread of Islam and all this kind of thing, even though the Crusades were to a large part to wipe out the Albigensians in the south of France, but let not that disturb anybody. Interventionism is redistributive state in the West. Liberation theology in Latin America and Africa in the 20th century. That's what it looks like. That's what this redistribution of the wealth. Now, he says he's against liberation theology. He said that in a number of times. He says he's battling it in Argentina, where he's from. He says he's not a Marxist, but he is against the excesses of capitalism. Crony capitalism, or state-controlled capitalism, is also called fascism. That is what it is, and that's what Rome eventually leads out to. When you have a state-controlled economy, you end up with the state picking the winners and the losers, and Rome being so powerful, she reigns over the kings of the earth, and she has political agreements between her and the states of the world, a lot of them, through these agreements called concordats. So it is in her best interest, in order to have fascism to be the controlling issue. Again, going back to Thomas Aquinas, and we'll look at Thomas Aquinas in the next show, if the Lord permitting. I just want to look at one quote to just show you again why this is politically advantageous for Rome to argue for such a system. And this is a quote from Richard Jinder, who's quoted in Neil Labello's Vatican USA. He's a Roman Catholic priest in America. This is a book back from 1972. One Roman Catholic priest in America comparing his church to a corporation. And this is why the Roman Catholic Church is the largest corporation. The Catholic Church must be the biggest corporation in the United States. We have a branch office in every neighborhood. Our assets and real estate holdings must exceed those of Standard Oil. You see, they're against corporations and all that kind of stuff, but they are the biggest one if you really look at their assets, etc. Our assets and real estate holdings must exceed those of Standard Oil and AT&T and U.S. Steel combined, and our roster of dues payment members must be second only to the tax roll of the United States government. Now, this suits Rome. Anything Rome does is politically advantageous. It is why in America they are going to push, because it used to be capitalist, but a long, long time ago it had forms of capitalism, at least in the 19th century. That was changed with the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, with the central banks. We haven't seen proper capitalism in a very long time. Various forms of it were seen in the British Empire, in the Anglosphere, things like that. But beyond that, there wasn't much. All you had in, like, my country, for example, in Ireland, all you saw was various forms of violent revolutionaries, forms of Leninism, and that form of Marxism, you know, that seems to still lurking on the surface a little bit here and there. Whenever Rome, when it, we'll leave it with this because this is a huge topic, and I have a lot more to cover. I've actually, on my notes, I've actually only got one topic, only one, and there's about eight of them. And I'll try in the next show to show Rome's connection to fascism and its anti-capitalism going back many, many, many years and document it more for you. And also look at Rerum Novarum. Now, I won't say it's the most complicated document on the planet. It can be found on the internet. Shares a lot of the language of the Marxists from years previous, even though they condemned it. All the forms of collectivism come from they all come from the thought around the Catholic Church state. I don't want to say they spawned it or they birthed it or anything like that, but they are completely in agreement with it and they benefit from it. What they don't benefit from is capitalism, and they are viciously anti-capitalist. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet, and the thing about it is, when, I'll leave you with this last one, when the people of Israel are crying out to Samuel, this is back when they had, after the time of the judges, they were crying out to Samuel for a king, so they'd be like just all the other nations. Now, granted, there was a bit of corruption. It talks about how Samuel was old and the name of his firstborn was Joel. His sons, Samuel's own sons, walked not in his ways and turned aside to lucre and took bribes and perverted judgment. Often it's very pragmatic. Well, instead of, well, we need to turn to God and depend upon God, they said, well, we're going to do what everybody else is doing. So, the thing we're just 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 6, but the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto God. And the Lord said unto Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but have rejected me. A little bit later on, so he's saying, they rejected me, they rejected my laws, they rejected my eternal law, summarized in the Ten Commandments. They've rejected that. And in warning before, he gave them a king. Eventually it was King Saul. But Saul warning the people, again, this is a state issue. This is the people. This is the magistrate. This is that realm. Right? Warning the people, what would happen if they got a king and if they got a more centralized government, if they got big government, basically. Saul told all the words of the Lord unto the people that asked of him. This is verse 10. Even God says to Samuel in the previous verse, protest solemnly unto them and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. And he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. He will take your sons, he'll take your prod, he'll take them for himself. And he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and will set them to ear his ground, and to reap his harvest, to make his instruments of war and instruments of chariots. Again, when you centralize, the heart of man will gravitate towards this. Verse 13, and he will take up your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers, and he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive tree. He will take the work of your hands, the labor of your hands, to prosper his own hand, basically. To feed his own ends. To take your fields and your vineyards, the fruit of your own labor, of your own vineyards and the best of them, and give them to your servants. If this was such a good thing, why does God warn them? He gives it to them. They have not rejected you, Samuel. They've rejected me. Again, look at Romans 13. Romans 13 talks about the role of the state, and let every soul be subject unto higher powers. People only quote that if they want people to be just blindly subservient to any rule that the state gives you. For there is no power but of God, but the powers which are ordained of God. And I just want to look at verse 3. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Wilt thou then be afraid of the power? Ultimately, and it talks about in verse 4, for he is a minister of God to thee for good. Romans 13. What the state is supposed to do is suppress evil. It wields a sword, it can execute those who are murderers, it punishes those who have broken the law. But it is not to be a terror to good works. When the government gets involved, when it controls the economy, when it does a top-down, it does exactly what is talked about here in 1 Samuel chapter 8. They will take your sons, they will take your ground, they will take your daughters, they will take your fields, they will take the tenth of your seed, they will take your manservants, verse 16, they will take the tenth of your sheep, on and on. They will take, they will take, they will take. And what you are asking for, in order to be like every other state, in order to follow the pragmatism of this works in other countries and this service is wonderful in another country, they will take, they will take, they will take, and they will give it. It will go straight to the... It will... See, the thing is, it's not even redistributed anyway. The state takes. And the state has gone beyond its biblical limits. And we should, regardless of what topic it is, seek to cry out to the Lord for what is thy will, O Lord. What is thy will in the family? What is thy will in the church of Jesus Christ? And what is the role in the state? I think for so long, the church has become so politicized and ended up in voting and compromising in these areas, we have no idea what to do in these areas. We have no idea about what we should be doing, what opposition or what biblical opposition we should have towards collectivism and what Rome purports. It's quite simple. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet. And you shall eat your own bread and not be busybodies, as 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 talks about. You labor. Work did not come in as part of the curse. Work has always been there. And it is not, there's nowhere in the Bible says it's a right. If you increase rights, you're going to increase the excuses for the government to intervene. Interventionalism is Romanism. And it's what Rome wants, because Rome has power over these states. May God bless you all. I pray this has been some help. If you've got any questions and anything you might want me to cover in this area, especially because I'm going to try and spend another maybe 2 weeks on this topic, dealing with it from different angles. I'll probably deal with Thomas Aquinas and Raymond of Arm next week. Please keep the show in your prayers. This has been Paul Flynn with Megiddo Radio.